Other horns, no.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you win.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate who you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, it was Alabama and Arkansas, 52-0 this year, 52-0 last year. I guess not a whole lot to say, huh?
Man, I was so happy we scored that last touchdown just because putting over 50 over a team just looks so much better than, you know, than under 50. I even saw a stat where this is the third time since Coach Saban has been at Alabama that he has put over 50 on a team, and Arkansas is blessed to have two of those.
Well, I saw that stat too. It's the third time that we've won by more than 50.
Right.
With a margin of 50. And so, yeah, you're right. Arkansas gets two of those three opportunities. So, that, yeah, lucky them, right? You know, and we almost didn't get that extra go-ahead touchdown. You know, we were sitting at 45, and, you know, coach seemed pretty content to run out the clock. What happened?
He did, man. And you know, you and I love these games. I mean, you know, some of my friends, you know, our friends was like, you know, I'm surprised you even went to that game. Well, you and I both know that these are the games that we live for. Because these are the games that we get to see the Alabama stars of the future, right? This is even better than the A-Day game because it's, you know, college competition against another college program.
Live fire, and, yeah.
Yeah, live fire. And so for us to get to see, you know, Derrick Henry get his first touchdown of his career, which is probably one of many more to come, is just awesome. But, yeah, I mean, ESPN, you know, apparently we were at the game, so we didn't see this till afterwards, but ESPN zoomed in on Coach Saban, and he was flailing his arms in disgust. It's what you and I called in the preseason, right? We said either Jostin Fowler or Derrick Henry's going to be doing this on a team in the second half and pissing off Coach Saban. And it took a little while, but we finally got to see it.
Absolutely. I found an awesome, you know, three-second video clip. It's a, you know, a GIF. And I'm going to post it on our website, and it's Derrick Henry, and you see the two guys chasing him, and just when you know you can see that Henry's gonna pull away, you see Saban just kind of shrug his shoulders and bring his hands up, like, what do I got to do to not score?
Oh yeah, and it reminded us of the Michigan State bowl game, right? And that's the last time you know this has happened, but he was quoted as saying. Apparently on his Thursday radio show,
yep.
I mean, you and I already know this about the guy, but he's like, you know, I never run up the score.
Right.
And he said, if we had just made a first down rather than scoring last week at Kentucky, I would have kneeled on the ball and all the fans probably would have booed us like we kneeled on the ball last year when we were ahead of Auburn.
Yep.
But he said, you know, have compassion. These kids have moms and dads. They work hard. You don't need to embarrass anybody. And you and I have said that to the people that sit around us, and that's one of the many things I respect about Coach Saban. He's like, if you'll wave the white flag, I'll wave the white flag. As soon as you want to take air out of the ball, I'll take air out of the ball. And so I love it for Derrick Henry because, I mean, let's face it, he called a sweep around the end, okay? And Derrick Henry outran a – what appeared to be should have been a faster cornerback and a safety that had the angle.
Yep.
And he just showed the potential of why he did what he did in high school.
Yeah, he really did. And you know, if fans didn't see this, I'm going to strongly encourage you to go to our site because again, you'll be able to see that in this little clip, but just how big he is compared to the guys that he is pulling away from. It's pretty impressive.
It is. And it just shows you that he has the full package, right?
Yep.
And it just shows what, you know, it just shows the potential of what he can bring to the table. I did think it was nice that McCarron's little brother, you know, was the tight end that did the seal block that broke him free. And so, you know, that's a nice little moment he was able to be a part of for Corey. So I'm happy for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I have enough fingers to count the number of tight ends that we played in the game. We essentially, you know, exhausted all of them, and Corey was able to get in. I think, I'm not 100% sure. I know we played against Georgia State, so that may have been his second game performance. Don't tie me to that. You know, he's well down in the, you know, walk-on tight end is well down in the list. And, you know, frankly, if he wasn't McCarron's brother, I don't know that, you know, he has some pull on getting some playing time.
Oh, sure.
But, and I don't mean that negative about his capability. I'm just saying we don't often see walk-ons. And so, you know, for us to play eight tight ends and you know, we get to that last one, you know, I think that's a little bit of a nod to the McCarron family.
And that's okay.
I'm not mad at it.
I think the McCarron family deserves that, right? I think with the record of what they say in the telecast, McCarron has got more national championship rings than he does losses as a starting quarterback. I think that entitles you to the right for your little brother, for your mom to see you and your brother on the field together.
Well, yeah, and I don't think they've played together, but, you know, the McCarron family has earned the right to get some garbage time at tight end. I'll say that.
Okay. Well, I definitely also enjoyed O.J. Howard getting his first touchdown. I was excited for him.
He was excited too. Did you see that little
dance
he did?
He was. And you know, and that's just awesome because, you know, we're spreading the ball around and we're trying really hard to get everybody involved. Like I even noticed on Jostin Fowler's touchdown at the beginning of the game that, you know, I think Todd Blackledge said in the game when I went back and watched some of it, that Jostin Fowler has caught four passes on the year and three have been touchdowns.
Yeah.
And so I found it interesting that you know, how we're using Jostin Fowler, okay, is at the line of scrimmage at the goal line as opposed to in the middle of the field. I thought that was an interesting stat.
Yeah, especially, you know, working him the ball. You know, you would think that, you know, when you see him in the backfield – and either at the H-back or truly in the backfield, when you see him in a goal-to-go type situation that you'd almost kind of expect, you know, we've got to take this away from them. You know, a lot of times like we'll do, we'll know kind of what someone's go-to is, and we'll try to take that away. You would think that you would start to spot, you know, Jostin and you know, I'm not advocating that I want someone to do that because I like him getting those touchdowns. But he just seems to get them almost just like clockwork down there now.
Well, but let me say the three touchdowns that he has caught has all been three totally different plays and uses of Jostin Fowler. And that has to go to the play calling of the offensive coordinator because all three of these have been totally different. Like the move he made, you know, he was the inside guy of the two tight ends on the left on this particular touchdown. And the action that he used at the line of scrimmage to just delay, and then spin out to the side, he hasn't done that all year. And so to your point, yes, teams should be looking for him. But it's kind of like a star defensive guy, right? That rushes from, you know, it's like Clowney's getting used all over the line of scrimmage for South Carolina. Well, we're being smart enough to line up all these guys in different places every single time, and so that I think helps a little bit.
Yeah, we're giving it different appearances, you know. Still, he's definitely someone that I would be looking for down there. But you know, you take him away, then you know, even if he goes out and you cover him, you're taking away someone from covering the run up the middle, or you know, a tight end at the back of the end zone. I don't think you take that away and prevent us from scoring touchdowns. We'll just score them other ways. But you know, it'll be interesting to see if he gets a spy down on the goal line moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, it definitely, you know, it couldn't have started any better for Alabama, you know, to have, what, 11 minutes off the clock, 4 minutes left in the first quarter, and you're already up 14-0. It definitely started very nicely for Alabama.
It did. And then, you know, we get a fumble on a kickoff, you know, take the ball from them. You know, later in the game, we block a field goal, you know. I'm kind of getting into special teams, I guess, but you know, it seemed to go well all day. You know, from the very beginning, you know, we jump up 14, dominate the first quarter. all the way to late in the game where we bust an 80-yard touchdown that, you know, everyone but coach wanted us to score.
No, absolutely. And you know, we know Coach Saban's the best coach in college football right now. But even when you were listening to the post-game quotes, you know, what I just truly love about Coach Saban is even after this game, he still wasn't happy. I mean, one of his first quotes was, is I still don't think we've played our best game. And then even whenever they go and talk to C.J. Mosley, who had a game-high 10 tackles, he says, the shutout was great, but the defense is still a work in progress, okay? And, you know, it's all about how we live up to the standards we have for ourselves. And so when you listen to the leaders on this team, they are not satisfied to just be in the headlines. And I'm amazed at how he programs these guys to do the little things, not look at the scoreboard. I mean,
yep.
Dude,
it's as easy. It's
they
easy
won 52-0 for the second year in a row. And yet they're and you're the stud defensive player. You have 10 tackles and you say, yeah, we still got standards to live up to.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to say those things. It's something entirely different to kind of live them. And I think that, you know, as a team that we are, and certainly in the person of Mosley and others, you know, we certainly do live those. And that is truly a testament to the coaching staff, and not just the head coach, but the position coaches, and just that just permeates the roster. They continue to appear to buy into that message. And maybe at the beginning of the season where just things weren't gelling and you kind of wanted to figure out what it was. And maybe it was just as simple as, you know, some blocking on the offensive line, or maybe it was just as simple as, you know, especially against Virginia Tech that, hey, they're a better team than any of us thought they were. You know, it could be along those lines as well, but they definitely seem to be growing in their level of buy-in. And we just seem to be clicking right now. You know, it seemed a flip switched a couple of weeks ago, and we just seem to be clicking.
Well, we are, and we talked about Chad Lindsey last week, right? And
yes.
We talked about, you know, does that play a part in it? I think Virginia Tech has two great interior defensive linemen, and they might be the best two defensive linemen we've played all year. You know, remember when we went to Penn State and they had that stud interior guy who just we couldn't handle him?
Yep.
Well, that's kind of the way Virginia Tech is with those two guys. And I wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting here at the end of the season watching them in the ACC championship game with, you know, playing Florida State with one loss.
Yep.
And so, but I also want to say, like, there's just one play in particular at the goal line when we scored our second touchdown. And so Kenyon Drake tries to bounce it out to the left side on the first play. He doesn't follow Justin Fowler.
Yep.
He doesn't make the play.
Yep.
Todd Blackledge says they line up in the eye again, which you know I love seeing the eye. And Todd Blackledge points out that Kenyon Drake did not follow Justin Fowler.
Yep.
He says, I bet you he will this time.
Yep.
They run to the right. Okay. And here's where I want to point this out real quick. Just great play calling at the goal line. And so what do? We take our Austin Shepherd, our right tackle, and we just block down with him. We do a kick out block with Anthony Steen, probably our best lineman, at the goal line.
Yep.
How many teams pull a guard at the goal line?
Right.
But he doesn't do a big pull. He just steps back. He goes behind Shepherd. And then what he does is he quickly sees two defensive players there to block. And in a matter of seconds, he picks the right one. He kicks out the one to the outside, knowing Justin Fowler's coming right behind him. Justin Fowler quickly picks up the inside guy, bowls him over, and Kenyon Drake walks into the end zone.
Yep.
And so my point of mentioning this real quick to all the listeners is just all the little nuggets in that one little play, right? You're smart enough to take Shepherd and have him crack down, which is an easier block, instead of trying to muscle some guy straight ahead. Then you take Steen and kick out. Then you bring in Fowler. Several things was happening at one time, but just to your point of clicking on all cylinders, just executing to perfection.
And if you think about, you know, and you kind of, you set it up very, very well and kind of hit on the point I want to make is you make it easier for everyone to make their block because everyone kind of roots, you know, roots in and, you know, we kind of both of us, you know, you better than I played, you know, some offensive line, and you know, everyone at the goal line, you know, kind of roots in and you know, is going to maintain their ground. And so, you know, Shepard blocking down just completely is disorienting, you know, to that tackle. And what he does by doing that is he exposes, you know, kind of leaves bare the other two defenders. Yes. And so, you know, I don't know.
And it makes them, It makes them wonder, okay, why did he do that?
Well, sure. And, you know, it's, you know, a tendency is to kind of follow the trap. And so, you know, that leaves you in a kind of a stand up position, easier to hit. And so I don't kind of know what the rule is, you know, staying inside, outside, you know, first man, you know, whichever it was. It sounds like there he was definitely taking the outside man, which really just paved the road for Fowler to come in and clean up the inside guy. And then there's your rushing lane. But, you know, even just the design is staged to make everyone's block easy. Yes. As opposed to everyone just beat your man one-on-one when they're kind of rooted in to not give up any ground. As intricate as it is, I mean, the design's pretty clever and the intent of what they're after is pretty clever. You know, we're going to account for everyone, but we're just going to do it in the easiest way possible.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to touch on A.J. McCarron. I think A.J. had maybe his best game of the season, in my opinion. Just the patience he showed to wait for guys to open, you know, to get open.
Yep.
And I guess to that same point, I want to give a little love to Cyrus and Austin Shepard, because I did not realize going into the game that the two defensive ends for Arkansas had combined for 10 sacks on the season going into the football game.
Yep.
And so, you know, we kept AJ clean. And AJ really wasn't under duress more than a couple times. And so he was able to sit back there when he needed to and buy time and just backpedal or whatever. And that post throw that he threw was probably his best throw of the season so far.
Yeah, and I like the way you set that up, that it was his best performance of the day. Because if you look at the stat line, and you know, and I was just gonna throw this out there as the joke, it was a boringly typical AJ McCarron stat line. You know, 15 of 21, 180 yards, three touchdowns kind of jumps out at you, but the rest of it's pretty pedestrian. But buried in that, you know, no picks, no sacks, only a couple of hurries. You know, some of those six incompletions were intentional throwaways. You know, kind of buried in that stat line is the genius of his performance.
It is. And, you know, the knock on AJ has been his accuracy with the short ball. And so I guess what I want to say is that he really was crisp with his passes. He only had a couple passes get away from him as far as in the stat line, because he did throw a couple away.
Yep.
But it was his best performance of the year, because he went to his second and third option several times, and he wasn't hurried and he wasn't rushed and he made something happen. I guess what I'm saying is he could have thrown the ball away four or five more times and he didn't. He just held on and made a play.
Right. Right.
And so I guess what I would say to the listeners is, yes, he completed only 15 balls, but go back and watch the tape and look at the completions that he made. They were some pretty hard passes on the run with crossing patterns where he hit the guys in stride perfectly so that they could get yards after the catch.
Yep. Yep. And he threw to eight different receivers, or he had eight different receivers catch passes, which speaks to just, you know, distributing the ball very well. Again, that goes to play call and player rotation. But one of the finer catches that he had on the day, you know, was that 30-yarder to Amari Cooper in the touchdown that he scored. I mean, he looked good. He, you know, on the day, I thought McCarron looked good. And then, you know, kind of flipping to Cooper a little bit, you know, three catches for 65. I thought he looked really good, and he seems to be rounding into shape. And so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, like you said, right, just like for AJ, right, people look at these stats and three catches for 65 yards, ho-hum. Well, Amari is starting to look like Amari from last year.
Yep.
What else jumped out at you on offense?
Well, I like the you know, the 532 total yards. I like the 352 rushing, the 9.5 rushing average, the 4 rushing touchdowns. I think that really speaks to the offensive line coming together, and you know, really pleased with that. And then of course we had Drake and Henry over 100 yards, so that was nice.
All right, so you got to take a little bit, man, and give a little more Drake love. Let's talk. The floor is yours, man. Talk about this physical running in between the tackles that Drake has started adding to his game. Remember when Eddie Lacy was here and we were kidding that TJ was picking up his spin move from Eddie?
Yep.
Right? Has Drake been picking up a little Yeldon, you know, stuff inside the tackles?
Well, you know, it seems that he's tried his hand at the spin move. He's getting a little more comfortable running inside the tackles. You know, he didn't follow, you know, Fowler for that touchdown because I think he saw a hint of daylight and kind of went after it. But, you know, he needs to follow his block at the goal lines. But he's getting more comfortable running inside. But he still has the speed. You know, he's not a one trick, right? He'll take it up inside, but then he knows that he can trust his speed to get to the outside. And, you know, on one of his touchdowns, he was running to the sideline trying to get the edge, and he just knew that he could, and he was able to run. You know, a lot of backs would have run and then tried to cut, you know, to get around the corner. That would have really slowed them down, and then they just would have been pushed out of bounds for a couple yards, and it would have been, you know. But he was able to run, get very close to the sideline, just suddenly change directions without losing speed, and he has shown that he's pretty good along the sidelines in terms of keeping his feet in and maintaining his balance down the sidelines. He's a different style of running back than what we've seen over the last couple of years. But his speed and his burst, and as he adds a physical element, a physical component, he is a joy to watch. And I am glad. I'm going to, you know, pull my shoulder or something, kind of patting myself on the back, because – you know, he's definitely, you know, and, you know, I'm not saying that you weren't on him either, but, you know, he's definitely someone that we both, you know, kind of had an eye on and predicted. You know, I know I predicted that he was going to be the number two with Yeldon. And I'm just excited. And you know what? And you picked this out last week, and then we saw it again this week, is the rotation. I'm going to kind of circle this as, is Drake kind of growing up and buying into the scheme that coach puts out there. Because last week he rotated, you know, one possession and then the second possession. And a lot of times it's two or three possessions before the second guy comes in. Well, we rotated not only just about every other possession, but there were times, Tommy, that we rotated backs in the middle of a drive. And we've done that before, kind of at the goal line when Saban wants to give a particular guy a touchdown. But this was middle of the field. We were rotating backs middle of the field. And I thought that was pretty impressive. And, you know, I don't want that to mean anything negative about Yeldon. I think that really means something very positive about Drake. And that's exciting. If we have two of those guys that are really that caliber and emerging in this way, and coach feels equally comfortable with both of them, even just rotating, you know, certainly every possession, but, you know, sometimes within a possession, I look favorably on that.
Well, I don't think we can underestimate note that we noticed that. And you were correct in thinking that Drake was going to be that second guy, because I thought Henry was going to earn that tag. And we don't know what the true issue was with Drake. We don't know what the disciplinary situation was, but he does seem to have turned a corner. The light seems to have come on. It kind of reminds me of the light coming on for Mark Barron. I never forget when the light came on for Mark Barron. It was like night and day. Yep. Well, this kid's just acting different. And you know, he was quoted as saying, Coach Saban, you know, we're both happy for each other. We push each other in practice. We're very competitive, TJ and I am. And coach, you know, coach sees us as interchangeable parts. Well, TJ Yeldon does not strike me as an ego guy, right?
Nope. Nope.
But to your point, having these two guys being able to be interchangeable even within a series, right? And being able to – and we're and I guess what we need to say for the listeners real quick is we're calling the same plays for each one of them.
Yep.
So what makes it so hard for the defense is not like we're doing – well, Drake's better with catching the ball out of the backfield and TJ's better on the draw play. No, we're doing the same damn plays for both of them. And so – you know, I just got to point out two series here real quick to your point. In the second quarter, TJ starts a drive. He rushes for 27 yards and then 2 yards. Then he comes out. Two plays later, Drake rushes his 46 yards for a touchdown. Bam. Two big plays from both of them on the same drive. But this other drive is humongous. TJ starts the drive, rushes up the middle for 7 yards, then 5 yards. Then he catches a 17-yard pass. Then he comes out of the game. Drake rushes for 9 and 10. And then TJ comes back in to rush for 24 yards and score a touchdown.
Yep.
So on that one drive, TJ Yeldon came in twice.
Yeah. It wasn't just one rotation.
I wanted to point that out real quick. They swapped and swapped back within the same drive.
Yeah, you know, we think that and look, I'm not comparing the upside necessarily. I want to be careful in putting it out there. But, you know, when we had Mark and Trent and we talked about them being interchangeable, I mean, they would rotate possessions, but they wouldn't rotate inside of a drive. And the only exception might be, you know, if coach wanted to give one of them a touchdown for, you know, whatever, kind of reward them with a touchdown, then he may do something there. But We didn't see a lot of in drive rotations.
Never.
Or last year we didn't when it was Lacy and Yeldon, and you know, the year before when it was Lacy and Trent, right? And so we've had these prime run. I mean, these, you know, superstar running backs. Come on, right? And we've not done this type of rotation. And I don't think that's a knock. You know, they're not as good, so we need to rotate them. Because I think, you know, their careers are still ahead of them. You know, Yeldon's just a sophomore, and Drake's a redshirt freshman. So I'm making no statement about their careers other than, darn, they look really good right now, and the bulk of their careers ahead of them. So, you know, they can still name the score, really, but they truly are interchangeable parts in that we can just bring them in the same drive, and they both bring. There's a lot of overlap in their skill set. You know, Yeldon and Lacy last year had two pretty different skill sets. You know, their skill sets, you know, they're both quick guys. They both can catch the ball. They both can make moves. Yeldon's a little more physical than I think Drake is, but Drake's adding that to his game. And you can't beat Drake's top end. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a running back that has his fifth year. And so there's a little bit of overlap in what they do that makes it easier for them to be interchangeable parts. But just like you said, you know, we run the same plays, and so they can go in there and really, you know, the rest of the offense isn't, you know, I don't have to block different. I don't have to do something different for this running back. His preference isn't something that causes me to have to, you know, block differently or perform in a different way. It's fun to see, and it's going to be fun to continue to see, because I think we're just going to see more and more of it.
Oh, absolutely.
We may see him in the backfield. That we talked about this with Mark and Trent, and it seems like eventually at some point we did see it. But yeah, we may see these guys in the backfield at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, because the score got like it did, we got to see, you know, Jostin Fowler. I thought it was interesting that Jostin Fowler got the love first. Okay. After that little combination I just mentioned, the very next series was the Jostin Fowler series.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to see the D Hart and Derrick Henry series. And so I guess there's another example I'll mention real quick that's also new, right? And maybe it's because we have so many running backs, because we just spent all this time talking about them on the same series. Well, in the fourth quarter, we did the same thing with D Hart and Derrick Henry. Because when you were going back and looking at the plays, we had a couple D Harts, then we had two Derrick Henrys, and then we had D Hart come back in the game. And so, and maybe that has more to do with Tenpenny, you know, getting his high ankle sprain. But I love getting to see all these guys get out there and just see tons of guys running the ball and tons of guys getting some pass catches.
Yeah, I don't think Derrick Henry and DR are interchangeable parts. I mean, there's
definitely not interchangeable parts. I just wanted to comment that all those guys got a little love in the end of the ball
game. Yeah, and that was good. I'm kind of more kidding anything than, you know, Tim Penny's injury. Certainly, you know, that's a game that he would have wanted to play in. You know, he was a star running back from Arkansas. And so, that's a game that he would have wanted to play. Looks like he got dinged up early in special teams, so hopefully we'll get him back. Those high ankle sprains, you just don't know, but hopefully he'll get through it pretty quickly. Yeah, and it was good to see DeHart get some carries, and Henry, you've been calling on that for a long time, so that was fun to see. Anything else on offense or
I just real quick want to mention that this is something that some people might not find as interesting as we do, but I just found it interesting that when we brought the second string offensive line in, that we did not take Airy out of the game. And so I just found it interesting that Airy was the only offensive lineman from the first string that stayed in the game with the number twos. And also, we didn't see Ryan Kelly. There was talk that there was going to be some Ryan Kelly play in the ball game. And I thought it was interesting that when we had the opportunity to sub him in, that he didn't come in the game and that Airy did stay in the game.
No, and let's spend a couple minutes on that, because it's at least a little bit interesting thinking about, you know, some of the rotations there. And so, you know, normally Grant Hill has been coming in very early, not really with the twos, but just subbing as a one.
Yes.
For Shepherd. And so we did not see Grant Hill operate in that capacity. He came in with the twos, which I think is a distinct difference. And so he came in with the twos and you're right, Ari stayed. And so, you know, I'm going to ask you what you think that is, and you can give some opinion on that. But I think that if I'm remembering correctly, Lindsey stayed in at first, and Kellen Williams took over Steen's position. And I guess on the next possession, Kellen Williams went to center, and so we didn't see Ryan at all. And so Kellen played center, and then we brought in Alphonse at that guard position. But at that point, we still had Ari in there, and so I guess so that's some neat dynamic of rotation. You know, probably not going to put Ryan out there if we don't have to, but if he's healthy, you think you give him some reps. And so that's kind of an interesting thing, keeping Kellen Williams practiced at two positions, guard and center. I think that's interesting. But do you think that's more of Ari needing reps, or do you think the drop-off is more significant at that second left guard position?
I think it's probably the latter. I think I find it interesting that with Grant Hill, I think Grant Hill has provided that sense of competition. How can I say this? I don't think the five guys that started the season for the offensive line were being pushed like they needed to. And so I wish Ryan Kelly would have never obviously gotten hurt. But that has created an opportunity for Chad's Lindsey, and he has seized the day.
Yes.
When Grant Hill has gotten to go with the ones, right? I think that has pushed Austin Shepherd. For the second week in a row, I thought Austin Shepherd looked pretty good. I think Austin Shepherd is playing like a guy that wants to stay on the field. And he's playing like a guy that if I don't play like I want to stay on the field, then Grant Hill is going to get his number called.
Yeah, and it's not just lip service that I may be pulled. I have been pulled.
And so,
how that feels.
There's something to be said about that, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have that at left guard. So I guess I'll bounce a question back at you. If we think it's the latter and we think it's the drop off, then when we ran Kellen Williams out there at guard, why not run him at left guard and run Alphonse at right guard and just experiment with that a little bit?
Well, that becomes the interesting question, because you think of the five starters that we had at the beginning of the season, you add in Chad Lindsey, you add in Kellen Williams, who started when Steen had to miss a game when he got dinged.
Yes.
And so you could say he's at the upper end of the rotation. Clearly Lindsey, because he's starting, and then we've seen Grant Hill play with the ones.
With the ones.
And so you could say, and if I'm missing someone, tell me. But that's eight, and which I think is pretty significant. And so when you get to that ninth guy, he's just, you know, at some point there's going to be a drop off. And I guess, you know, if we're going eight deep and they're all just, you know, reasonably, you know, capable, you know, then, you know, I think that's great. And then you just get that drop off. And frankly, I don't know who that next lineman is. I don't think it's Latua, you know, obviously at that guard position. I don't think it's Leon Brown. You know, that next lineman might be Alphonse.
Alphonse, yes.
And so which really underscores your question, then why would you not put Kellen over at the other guard position and get Alphonse in there? And yes, let's just see what they do. I don't have an answer to that. That would have been, you know, and you know, unless they're sending a message to Ari that, you know, here's what playing with the twos looks like. You know, or I don't know.
Or we just want to get you some more work.
And it's as innocent as that. That's why I'm inclined to go, because we're not the only ones, you know, or you're not the only one kind of thinking of the idea. Well, you know, let's put Kellen on the other side and bring Alphonse in, because Kellen has been around long enough that, you know, you think that he could play any of those three interior positions. Whereas you might say, well, Alphonse, you know, is a redshirt freshman. You know, we've only concentrated him at one of the two guard spots.
Yes. Well, I do want to highlight what you just said, though, the fact that we have ran eight guys out there and still continued to improve each week. Man, people aren't highlighting that around the country, right? How many number one teams in the country in years past would we have talked about, you know, just finished a football game where we averaged 9.5 yards from the line of scrimmage each play, mm-hmm. and we're running this many guys out there?
Well, we've had seasons where we would have lost games.
So I think that's, you know, another impressive stat.
Yeah,
I just want to throw that out there real quick, because we talked about that during the game and that was interesting.
No, that's good. I'm glad you brought that up, because we kind of skimmed over the offensive line. You know, 352 yards rushing and a 9-point, you know, five. And we mentioned those stats. I mean, those are great stats representative of the performance of the offensive line. But it's good to kind of call out some of the individuals and what we're seeing in the rotation, and even some of the question we have in the rotation. You know, hey, look, that's the stuff you can't get. You know, you're not going to get that anywhere else.
No, absolutely. Well, who's your mini game ball on offense?
Well, probably one of the reasons that I didn't want to, you know, jump too deep. I'm glad we did it. But one of the reasons I didn't just jump in both feet with the offensive line is I'm giving my mini game ball to Austin Shepherd.
There you go.
And I feel like you've used my content, you know, because this may have been one of his better performances. And this will sound like a negative, and I really mean this as a positive. He kept Grant Hill on the bench, I think, with his performance.
Yes.
And so, yeah, he's playing like a guy who wants to spend some more time on the field, and there he is. So Austin gets my mini game ball.
Okay. Well, this guy might not be in the mini category, but he definitely is not the headliner guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to, you know, last week I gave love to Brian Vogler, and this week I'm just going to give Jostin Fowler some love.
Okay.
Because I know he's somewhat of a headliner, but I so wanted to see the I formation last year, and when he got hurt and we didn't have a guy that could be that guy.
Yep.
I just so missed it. And so that goal line play I highlighted earlier,
yep,
that's the good crap, man, when you just dominate. Because, guys, I remember many years ago before Saban, in some years against the powerful running attack of Arkansas, where they just wore us down.
Yes.
And I'm so happy to see us be on the other side of that coin.
Yep. Finish your thought. You said something during the game about Fowler and how you'd hope that we would use him at some point in the season. You know, finish that thought.
You know, I just really hope that we get to, I hope that as we showcase this I formation, I'd like to see him have some dive plays in third and five or less yards, or maybe second and five and less yards. I'd like to really see him get the fullback dive play up the gut. That would be the other old school play that I would like. And we seem to be getting so much success in the middle of the offensive line right now. And I think we talked about that last week. And I think Anthony Steen being there is huge. I think him and Lindsey are communicating very well. Okay. And they're giving each other help. And I want Fowler to bust some runs up the gut there. I want to see that before the season's over.
Yeah, when you said that, and for the life of me, I should have looked up this kid's name because I'm not going to get it right. But it, you know, when you say a fullback dive, it reminds me of back when Nebraska was kind of kicking everyone's butt in the 90s, and they had that Schellinger. They had that fullback that just, you know, they would never, you know, he would never get the ball, but when he did, he would run for 20 yards. And it's like, you know, that play's only good once every three games, but. But when it hit, it was always fun to watch the big white dude just run right up the middle untouched, you know, for a big gain. And so it would be neat to see a Fowler do something like that.
Absolutely.
Well, let's flip the field to defense. And as we do that, I just want to remind everyone to check out secbias.com. Sign up for a free membership there. You can interact with fans for all the SEC teams. You can interact with us. There's been a number of people in the last week that have gone out there and signed up and been interacting with us and putting questions and comments out there. And so we appreciate that and want to see more of you guys out this next week. But, Tom, talk to me about defense. What jumped out to you or stood out to you most on defense?
I don't know if it was the most, but the two things I wanted to – I guess – the first thing, I'll answer it this way. The first thing that jumped out at me on defense was Jonathan Allen coming in on the second play of the game.
Yep.
Because it speaks to what you said about Grant Hill, okay? And it speaks to what they think Jonathan Allen must be bringing to the defense, kind of like Kenyon Drake on the offense. And so he comes in on the second play of scrimmage, and they happen to run around. They run to the left. He's on the end there. He sets the edge. He takes the physical left tackle. He's much smaller than the left tackle, by the way. He sheds the left tackle and takes his one free arm and drags down the running back.
Yep.
And I'm like, you go, boy. You're only 255 pounds. That's the first thing that jumped off That was a flash, as you and I call it. That just flashed to me.
No, absolutely. And just kind of keeping with that, with even the same side of the ball, in some respects, it's not unlike how we tracked Pagan last year. You know, Pagan, you know, played a little bit late and started to get a little more playing time, started to see him more early in the game. And before we knew it, you know, he was in the first quarter, and I can't remember if he got a start last year. It seemed like maybe towards the end of the year he did. And so to see Jonathan Allen come in second snap of the game, you know, we're seeing him on a very similar trajectory where he's getting into the game more and more and earlier, and all of a sudden there he is kind of to start the game.
He is, and I just pulled him up because I thought I was underselling me a little bit. So he's 6'3", 264, so 264, but – you know, for a true freshman, him and Tim Williams both are showing a little bit of flashes as potential guys that we feel like can be that put your hand in the dirt from the edge kind of guys.
Yep. And again, not to repeat what we talked about last week, but, you know, freshmen leaking their way into the rotation and into playing time is pretty amazing given the talent that we have across the board. But, you know, it also helps perpetuate the machine where if I'm a stud freshman and someone's telling me that I'll never get to play there because of, the competition, you know, the proof is in the pudding right there. If you can come in and you can learn the system and you can buy into the process and you can perform, hey, the field's right here. And here's a list of freshmen that's come in and played.
Well, that's true. And let's just touch on this one more way. Saban would be, if he's got 15 defensive linemen, okay, that have a motor, guess what? He's going to rotate all 15 of you. Because, right, in our audio at the beginning of the podcast, right, make their ass quit. That's our trademark as a team. Well, how many guys can I run out there? Okay. So Jonathan Allen and Tim Williams is getting some love because Dalvin Tomlinson went down early. Yep. And Dalvin Tomlinson was making a splash as a red shirt. Well, Dalvin Tomlinson is 6'2", 287. And so for Jonathan Allen to be making the plays he's making at 264, right?
Mm-hmm.
That typically, I guess what I'm trying to say is that Ed Stinson is 6'4", 292. Jeffrey Pagan is 6'4", 290. These guys are 2- and 3-year lettermen. And so these are your starting guys, to your point. And these other guys are making a splash at a position that Saban likes to have 300-pounders. But because you're showing flashes, he's still putting you out there. That left tackle had to have him by 50 pounds.
Yeah, now we're going to start to see some of those lighter guys just as more teams go to the spread, you know, that we're going to have to change a little bit of our scheme. But you take a guy like that that's got a motor, that can get around, that's agile, you know, they're going to find a way on the field and they're going to contribute against any opponent. And again, you know, hey, he was against a running team, right? It was no surprise that Arkansas was going to, you know, run the ball. That's their MO. And so for him to get out there second play of the game, you know, he's doing something to earn that. And so I think that's a good something to catch there. I think what you know, it's the things that you observe. It's not necessarily the sort of the dominant observation, but it's one of my first observations because it's just simply what I was looking for. Is Bradley Silf starting at the other corner spot opposite Ballou? I thought we would see freshman Eddie Jackson, and we didn't. We saw him on special teams, and then late in the game, we saw him in there. And there's some report that he's still trying to get over an ankle injury, and so I don't know if there's something to, you know, let's put him on special teams.
Exactly,
because he can run a straight line. He doesn't have to, you know, and that's different than having to play corner. I don't know, you know, I've thought about, you know, you and I watched the game and kind of joked the whole game about why is he on special teams.
Yeah.
But not on corner. And so part of it could be the, you know, the change of direction. And again, if I'm grasping at straws, tell me. But I'm just trying to, you know, what could be the reason? Because I don't think that he's in a doghouse. I don't get that impression. I've not read anything about that. So I don't think he's in the doghouse where he's being pushed down the roster. The only thing I can think of is maybe put him out there where he can get some confidence back in post-injury. You know, we've moved defensive backs, or no, we've moved running backs and receive, you know, D Hart's an example, Demetrius Gould a couple years ago. We moved them over to defensive back, you know, so that they could run around and get some confidence changing directions and running around and not have to do that at running back, you know, where they're going to get hit in the line of scrimmage. And, you know, I wonder if it's something similar to that, rather than corner on an island where you have to, you know, do some quick change of directions. Let's just get you out running down the field and you know, trying to make a tackle. I don't know.
If that's the case, right, then why did we see him in corner at the end in the fourth quarter?
I don't know. And like I said, I'm not saying – well, and I'm not saying this is – you know, I'm not pounding on the desk saying this is what it is.
No.
I consider and say, I don't know, and we can laugh about it, or I've got a theory, and I don't know how much water it holds.
No, I'm not calling you to the carpet. I'm saying that we were thinking some of these things in the game because we had no other explanation for it. Mm-hmm. And then when we saw him come out at corner late in the game, that's when we were really perplexed.
Yeah, and you know, my whole idea is kind of turned on its ear when he does that, but...
Well, also we noticed in the game because Arkansas, I mean, let's face it, right? They only passed for 30 yards in the week prior against South Carolina is, you know, when Vinny went down so early with, unfortunately, now a season-ending injury.
Yep.
On kickoff coverage, you know, just like Tenpenny, unfortunately, went down on kickoff coverage. Landon Collins – was brought in, you know, Landon Collins was asked to shift over to strong safety right away.
Yep.
And I guess that's the other thing that jumped out to me. I've mentioned one, you just mentioned one, and the third one was this, because HaHa was not, you know, he was reinstated the day before by the NCAA. Saban said he would, you know, in the pregame interview, Holly asked him, and he said, you know, you'll see this guy nickel and dime. He hasn't worked with the ones very much. Well, HaHa was asked to come in pretty early, you know, given the Vinny situation. And so for Landon to just quickly on the fly, right, we've just kicked the ball off. Vinny just gets taken off the field. HaHa's got to run on the field. Landon, we need you to quickly shift from free to strong, even though you haven't practiced it in 3 weeks. Okay, coach, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I can go do that.
And I sat there and told our friend Greg that in the game. I was like, look at that, man. That is so awesome that he is such an interchangeable part that he can just sit there and just do that on the fly like that. I don't think there's a lot of guys on our football team right now that can do that.
No, I don't think so either. And you know, and even HaHa now, you know, and he's a frontline starter and you know, he is what he is. But, you know, he's missed the last couple of weeks, and he came in and, you know, played a significantly larger role than he probably otherwise would have. And so in some respects, if we're going to lose Vinny, it's, you know, at this point, you know, part of my mind wants to almost, you know, consider it a trade. Okay, well, if Vinny has to go down, at least we get HaHa back. And you know, and so there's something to that. Now, you know, that's going to have to be something that we watch, you know, because Vinny, and you know, and we kind of lament and celebrate the fact that he's a converted high school linebacker and he's playing single high safety. And so what in the world is he doing back there doing that? But then we celebrate that, you know, he knows where everybody needs to be lined up, and he's, you know, he's back there for a reason. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, kind of how that rolls out. Do we get burned a couple of times because maybe the person we have back there doesn't know everyone else's responsibility and is not able to make those adjustments? I don't know.
Well, I think it makes me feel better that Colin, you know, we talked about it last week about Colin's preparation and HaHa's absence.
Yep.
It does make me feel more comfortable that Landon Collins currently knows the star and the money and the strong and the free. I mean, it makes me feel comfortable that he can run five positions. And so and we even talked about it in this game real quick for the listeners. Sometimes Arkansas lined up with nobody spread out on the right side at wide receiver. And so Landon Collins was walking up there. I guess he was going to be setting the edge anyway, right, at strong safety in Vinny's absence. And so he was out there kind of where a cornerback would normally be, guarding that area of the field. And so you and I even talked about, look where Landon Collins is playing out there. So he even lined up kind of in a cornerback space in several plays during the ball game.
And I wonder if he wasn't it was pretty amazing to see him, you know, Landon's playing corner. And I could go a couple different ways with that. But, you know, he's sitting there playing corner. And, you know, or the equivalent of corner. And sometimes we did only have one corner on the field, you know, in Arkansas.
It was only Deion Blue, right? Because you and I talked about it. We said, where's Sylvie? We don't see Sylvie out there. And it was just Deion Blue, and the rest of them were safeties.
And we didn't have, I don't want to call Arkansas stupid, but man, it makes me wonder, why would you only play one receiver? And then when you see that they're playing a safety over at the other corner position, why wouldn't you do something to kind of take advantage of that? And if you know that, you know, we've got, you know, look, I've started to feel more and more comfortable, you know, even with some of the question marks, you know, why is Eddie Jackson not out there and things like that? You have to think, why don't we try to take a couple shots and maybe try to pick on these cornerbacks and maybe flood a zone over there? And hell, let's especially do that if they've got a safety over there playing, you know, playing corner. I don't understand. Now, you know, Landon played well, and obviously if they started rolling out, you know, two and three receivers, we would have brought in one of the cornerbacks. So I think that their alignment and their personnel groupings allowed us, here's sort of the nugget, right? I guess this is what I want to get out. their personnel groupings allowed us to put more better players on the field.
Yes, yes.
Because nothing really against Sylvie or Eddie Jackson, or, you know, we saw Cyrus get some run over at the position. But if we can put Haha, Jarek, and Landon out there with Blue, well, those may be, you know, position independent, our four best DBs.
Oh, sure. And so if the other team is going to allow you to scheme that way, then just go ahead and do that.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of just what are they thinking? Let's let the team get more of their better players to play against us when they're already kind of shutting us down.
Hey, for our fan, Eric, who's a longtime season ticket holder next to us at the games, let's talk a little John Fulton action. What did you think when Sylvie did go down? And so now he's got the high ankle. He's out. Vinny's gone down. What did you think about the rotation? Because we talked about Eddie Jackson, right? So we're scoring all these touchdowns, and we keep seeing Eddie Jackson running down on kickoffs. But yet when the defense kept coming out after Sylvie went down, we saw John Fulton a lot, and then we went to Cyrus Jones. Were you surprised at how that went down?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
And you weren't screaming like Eric, but what'd you think about that?
Actually, I was. I like that we're honest about our players, and I think our fans, you know, people who listen like that, you know, that we're honest and we'll call out players. You know, there's probably a line I want to be careful not to cross, and you know.
Oh, sure. Yes.
And with John Fulton, look, he's out there. He's got a scholarship. He's been on the, you know, he's a fifth-year guy. But he's not getting it done. He's not. And, you know, we blocked that field goal, you know, kind of one of their best drives of the day. They drove down and had a chance to kick a field goal. And, you know, fortunately, we blocked it. And I think it was our, you know, the irony's not lost on me. The Blue, the other cornerback, is the one who blocked it. And if they had scored that field goal, then my punchline was going to be that John Fulton gives up a field goal. You know, John Fulton gets beat for a field goal because they literally just drive down the field, you know, against, you know, John Fulton, you know, completing passes, you know, what looked to me, you know, completing passes against, you know, his man. And I was surprised that he was in there. I thought, you know, that's when we're going to see Eddie. I thought that's when we're going to see, you know, Cyrus come back in. You know, we're going to see someone, but we won't see Fulton. But sure enough, we saw him out there. And he struggles in coverage. And we take, you know, maybe you thought, well, this team struggles passing the ball. And so it's okay that, you know, that we can put him out there. And it proved, you know, that, you know, necessarily wasn't okay. And I know Saban likes to reward the seniors, and especially guys that are program guys. And I have no reason, absolutely no reason in the world to think otherwise, that John Fulton is a great guy. He's a program guy. He's a Saban guy, that he's all of these things. And if, you know, if we could have guys on our team that could have the attitude that John Fulton has, that's probably, we want more of those types of guys. But when it comes to performance on the field, I find him lacking at times.
Well, I hope that what that was John Fulton, we're calling your number again, and we want you to go out there and be the guy we know you can be. I think when Sylvie went down, because for whatever reason, they weren't going to run Eddie out there, right? Just like they didn't run Eddie out there against Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
I think Sylvie was next up. And when Sylvie went down, we were putting John Fulton out there to give him another opportunity to seize that moment.
And you know, with the idea that, you know, with the idea that this is a team that really can't hurt us.
No, but just to highlight, I wanted to just talk about it for the listeners for a second. But let's not forget, last year in the SEC championship game, John Fulton was tested numerous times against a very explosive Georgia team, and he stepped up and made plays.
That, I think, is what's so maddening about him.
He can make plays.
Because,
he's made
because
them before.
He can and has. And he played very well against A&M last year before he got hurt.
That's why I'm saying I think it was more of, we're going to call your number again, and we want you to step up and be what we know you can be. Hey, what'd you think about Trey DePriest? I want to mention him for a second because, you know, all the talk about Arkansas and the running game and the traditional two-back set, and you're seeing their offense that you don't see enough nowadays. You know, Saban even talked about in practice last week, the defense was all hyped up because they were excited to go against a different offense. When you look at the stat line and you watch the game, you know, Trey didn't make any mistakes, but I was a little surprised in what was probably his biggest playing time of the season so far nothing jumped off the page to me.
No, I didn't know where you were going to go with that because I have nothing jumped out of me. I don't mean that negative.
I'm just saying this is your time to shine, right? In this against this offense, and I just didn't see anything that I recall big time.
Yeah, you're more of a true middle linebacker against a team that's gonna run the ball. There's no Nico Johnson lurking. You know, this is an opportunity. You're probably going to get a lot more reps. You know. He didn't flash. He didn't stand out. And again, I'm not trying to mean that negative either.
No.
He just didn't. I had to go look at, as you were saying it, I was like, well, what did you see that I missed? And, you know, he had three assists, and, you know, one was an assisted, you know, tackle for loss, but, you know, he didn't. And look, assists, there's kind of a range of what could mean an assist, but I'll look at that and I don't take a whole lot away from that, you know, that he was there to kind of help bring some people down, but, you know, that he did not in and of himself, you know, affect the play of the other team.
Right. I just wanted to mention that real quick and get your thoughts on it. Anything else that jumped out at you on defense?
No, I don't think so. You know, how
obviously before the Mosley report, because we gotta give Mosley for love for his day. But I just want to see if there was anything else.
Yeah, you know, Haha getting coming back from suspension and getting the INT, I thought was good. And Cyrus, you know, almost much in the way that you think about, we're gonna roll Fulton back out and see if see if he can capitalize on some of his, you know, past. You know, we put Cyrus back out there. I thought he played well, and he picked up an interception, hats off to Cyrus. And then, you know, Gino's just continuing to find his way onto the field, which, you know, again, we thought that, you know, he'd be, you know, locked in at that star position. Turned out not so much there. Jarek is just really winning the day there. But Gino's finding his way on the field more and more. I suspect with Vinny out that we'll see more and more of Landon Haha and Gino. So, you know, I think we still have some talent back there and we may overall be. You know, the irony is, you know, losing Vinny, who, look, and you don't have to agree with me on this one. I think maybe you will. Vinny, for what he brings top to bottom, is one of our better defensive players. And so losing Vinny, we may actually end up more athletic in the defensive backfield. What's kind of your thought on that?
Well, we will absolutely end up more athletic because I have been frustrated that we would blitz Haha at safety instead of having him at center field. We would rotate Vinny over in the one safety high look, which is what we did on the big play we gave up against Texas A&M. And that's just not you're setting him up for failure from a converted linebacker.
But he's been faster this year.
He has been faster.
And, I have to defend the guy.
He has been faster, but in space, it's not his area. Texas A&M is the most potent quarterback and wide receiver lineup we have faced.
Yep.
And he got burnt a couple times, as did Nick Perry.
Yep.
And so we have not been tested. I'll say this. We have not played the skill teams with the great slot receivers to match up against the safeties to expose Vinny's weakness. And so we have not played enough teams that have had skill on the inside like they've had skill on the outside. Okay. But I can't take away that the boy's a playmaker because he had two interceptions on the year and they were both returned for touchdowns. So you can't underestimate that. Okay. But I will say the play of Jarek Williams has been surprising. We talked about it last week. No need to talk about it again. He just continued the play at the line of scrimmage, blitzing off the edges. He just seems more comfortable. And so what's so great about that is that with this Vinny injury, that I think it allows Geno, because let's face it, Coach Saban must think Geno that he is more comfortable trying to work him into free safety than he is the star. Because when HaHa got suspended, who did Coach Saban pull 45 minutes before each practice? Geno and Landon.
Yep.
It wasn't Jarek. It was Geno and Landon to learn HaHa's position. And so Geno's played some star. And so now if Geno can play a little strong and it can become the Geno Landon HaHa rotation, man, I'm okay with that. Hell, yeah. you wanted Geno to be the other corner. I'd love Geno being in the center field.
Sure.
Sure. That would make me very comfortable.
Yeah. So,
well, hey, I want to touch on Cyrus for a quick second because,
sure.
You know, he got burnt on the play before the pick and yep. Saban ripped him a new one and basically was motioning to the sideline like, you've got to break on the ball. You've got to break on the ball. And then the very next play, from what some of the AL.com reporters have written, it's like he did what the coach told him on the very next play, and it was like he was the wide receiver, and he intercepted it by a mile.
Yes,
so did. I hope that is a huge confidence builder for Cyrus Jones.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, you teased the Mosley report, and we've talked about him a little bit. You know, this is a big stat line for CJ, maybe one of his better of the seasons, but you know, 10 tackles, one tackle for loss, one pass breakup, and two quarterback hurries. And then he is just a steady motivating force across the defense. Love me some CJ Mosley.
This was, you know, he's not the big stat line guy typically, right? And so, like you said, this is a lot of stats for him. And he just goes about in his little workmanlike, quiet way. But let's talk about the interception from HaHa real quick, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Arkansas seemed to feel like in their limited passing, you even talked about it in the stands. You said maybe they've been working on this all week because they dragged the tight end down the left hash, okay? And they made a big play on it. And then they came right back and they said, we're going to do the same play down the right hash. And CJ, to his credit, turned around like we always want them to do instead of just looking at the receiver. He turns around, puts his hand up, deflects the ball so that HaHa can get the pick.
Yep.
And that was, you know, to your point, right, for a linebacker – To have one breakup in a game is huge, much less two pass breakups.
Yep, yep. And that tight end, you know, Hunter Henry, he's certainly, you know, a kid that we recruited. You know, he was so demonstrative on that second pass. You know, like you talked about, they ran, you know, two back to back. He was so demonstrative on, you know, like as if to say, damn it, that worked all week, and now it didn't work in the game. You know, that's what it spoke to me of, you know, we worked on this and this was supposed to be our play. And you know, there's something in that that's a little defeatist when that was what we had. That was our answer. And they just pick it off. And so it's going to be a long day.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, there's two other things I do want to touch on very quickly. Number one, I want to give we don't have to have the Denzel Duval report because he's not deserving of that yet. But just to give Denzel some love for, you know, because he's been fighting through an injury. Yep. On one big sack in particular, he came off the left edge and he just had relentless pursuit of the quarterback. And just motor didn't end and just went after Brandon Allen and was able to get him over there at the sideline. And it was just great to see that. And so I just wanted to mention that because that was a great play that Denzel made. The other thing I wanted to touch on real quick, just so we can put this on the radar, is we might have to start having a Darren Lake watch. I just have to say for purposes of Darren Lake, granted he's gotten to play a little bit more, but this is the second week in the second consecutive week that he's had a pretty good stat line for him. He didn't have five tackles this week. He only had three, but the plays he made were noticeable plays, and I hope the boy's coming on.
Yeah, he's someone that we need to come on. You know, Ashawn did not, I don't think that he had a tackle at all. You know, he's still a player inside. If Lake can come on, and, you know, we have called out at different times Brandon Ivory as well, and, you know, and he had, a couple of assists. So he's, in fact, his stat line is the same as Trey DePriest, you know, three assists and half a tackle for loss. And so I'm laughing. I'm thinking, well, between the two of them, we might have a player. And I say that just kidding, because,
yes,
you know,
yes.
But it looked funny to see that side by side, you know, three assists, both of them with half a TFL.
Absolutely.
But no, you know, dumb joke aside, you know, Darren Lake coming on, we know what we have in Ashawn Robinson. You know, Brandon Ivory, we've seen flashes of him. And one thing we did talk about, you know, and I kind of stand by this too, this is something we talked about in you know, the preseason, is we didn't have a Cody or a Chapman or a Jesse Williams. We didn't have sort of a name brand star in the middle. But one of the things that we thought, you know, that we could replace that with is just continuing to rotate guys in and and just having, instead of maybe instead of quality at the top, that we would have quantity that we could rotate in. And so I think we're starting to see a couple of things. I think we're starting to see us play more two defensive tackles as opposed to a single nose guard.
Yes.
And that speaks to kind of personnel. But then, you know, because we have the depth, the quantity, that we can put them both out there. And then we're seeing some of these guys come on. And so when we do play more of a true nose, you know, kind of Ivory's the guy there, because I think he's sort of the, you know, one of the bigger guys. But, you know, we do have multiples that can rotate in there. So I like what we're seeing sort of refine and present itself across the defensive front.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, who gets your mini game ball on defense?
Man, I have four.
And don't steal mine.
Well,
why don't go first? Can I go first?
Why don't you go? Because I've got so many I can't choose, and so I may accidentally steal your guy.
All right, I'm doing Jarrett Williams. Before he really becomes like at the top of the stat sheet every week, Jarrett Williams, for the reasons we've mentioned, has been a pleasant surprise given the loss of Ha-Ha, given what we thought Geno was going to do early on, and now given the loss of Vinny. Jarrett Williams, for the second week in a row, has been toward the top. You know, last week he was, you know, third. This week he's second on the stat sheet. And he's really seeming to become more and more comfortable. And I think we're going to continue to see big things from this kid.
Yeah, I'm hats off on that. And, you know, I went with him recently, you know, just because he's becoming, you know, indispensable. And, you know, he's got an expanding role, you know, blitzing and such. You know, he's a guy that, you know, missed all of last season for a knee injury and has come back and is really making up for that lost time. And so he's a kid that, you know, you just have to be happy for him, you know, sort of interpersonally, because what he went through last year and then the opportunity, and then coupled with the success that he's having this year, you know, hats off to Jarek. Really like what he's doing. I'm no real closer to kind of picking who I think, you know, I'm going to go with Cyrus Jones. I think for reasons that we've talked about, we tried to rotate at corner around him. You know, that didn't work out. We talked about Fulton. And so we put Cyrus back out there, you know, gets beat once, but then, like you said, makes the pick the next play, you know, really, really hoping that, that he's sort of maturing into a player at that position. I don't know that he's ever, you know, the starter, but he'll be given the opportunity to compete for it. And if he can be, you know, in the two deep at that position, then I think that'll be very positive.
No, it will be, but you know, we also can't underestimate while he played cornerback in high school, but last year was at wide receiver, right? I don't want to not highlight the fact that he does have two picks on the year. For a guy who's played at little at cornerback as he has, he does have two INTs halfway through the season.
Yeah,
that's pretty impressive.
Look, I'm giving him my mini game ball, and so yeah, I think that.
I'm just saying he's already got two picks. There's a lot of starting cornerbacks in this league that don't have two picks on the season.
No, I'm with you. So yeah, he's a guy, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on and see, you know, sort of where his career goes from here, because he will have the opportunity ahead of him to, you know, to compete for a starting role.
And I do want to mention real quick, because we did say after the A-Day game, right? What did we notice about him in the A-Day game?
Oh, his speed.
His closing speed.
Yes.
Remember when he played, he was on the left side and and Vinny was beat and he gave help and he got over there and just overran the play?
Yep.
So we did highlight that at the A-Day game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Talk to
anything else on defense?
No, I think that's good. I like the shutout. I like the zero penalties on the game. Man, Arkansas, man, they started 3-0 and they are now 3-5.
Well, someone said as the level of competition has increased each week, the margin of victory has gotten wider and wider and wider too in their losses.
Well, there you go.
Did Dylan Lee block the punt? Did he deflect the punt, or did the punter just get nervous?
I think it was a shank.
Okay. Because I tried to go back and see it, and it didn't look like he got a piece of it, and the announcers didn't say it. But, boy, from the stands, from the angle we had in the stands, it looked like he got a piece of it.
I think.
Right? But I guess he did.
It could have been a rush and a shank. Maybe he did. I don't think that he did, but he got close, and you keep getting close like that, you're going to get one.
Hey, give some Cade Foster love, man. How do you like that 48-yard field goal, man? I've heard that he's only, missed one field goal in the year so far?
I read that, and I thought it was a misprint.
Come on, man. Listen, you got to give the boy some love, man. He is currently delivering for this football team.
No, he is. He has hit 90% of his kicks. Well, no, it's not quite that. He's only had nine attempts, one of which is a miss.
Right.
So eight of nine's
pretty darn good.
Yeah, and his miss, I mean, look, if we're going to be fair, which we should be, his miss was a 46-yarder. And so that's not a... You know, that's not a chip shot.
Right.
So, you know, in fairness, he's kicking very well. He's kicking very well.
What else jumped out at you on special teams, man? What do you think about the fact that we were that Arkansas was double teaming Landon Collins from the beginning of the game, both on punts and kickoffs?
Yeah, I thought that was, you know, fun to watch. I mean, they're kind of picking up, you know, who's the playmaker there. And then so let's double the playmaker. And so at least they're putting in some work and studying and trying to improve and trying to do better, right? And so, you know, he's who I would double team. The trick is we have a number of headhunters on our coverage units. And so if you take someone, if you can't block us one-on-one, then it really becomes a liability because then you do have to double team. And if you're double teaming – if you're double teaming Landon, then there's any number of other guys. You know, as soon as I say that, I draw a blank. But, you know, D Hart's going down there and, and blowing people up. And, you know, other people are as well, you know, Vinny was okay. And then, so he's, you know, he's hurt. And so we got to, you know,
well, Derrick Henry's the guy that caused the fumble.
Yeah. Derrick Henry's going down there. And so, you know, we've got guys that are lining up and going down there, and making plays. And so our coverage team is playing very, very well. And so that's fun. You know, that's certainly fun to see. So, but yeah, it was neat to see them kind of double team Landon. It was neat for us to get the, you know, for that team to, you know, for that team to have the success of, you know, forcing a fumble. You know, that's exciting, you know, for a coverage team. You know, it's you go down there and you blow people up and that's what you want to do. But man, it's exciting when you can force a turnover too.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for it to be, and I guess going back to Landon Collins for a second, I guess what was so noticeable about that was that on the punt, right? You know, you got your gunners on each side and you typically have one guy on each one of them. Well, they had one guy on DeAndre White and they had two guys on Landon Collins.
Yeah.
And so it was so noticeable, right? And then on the kickoff coverage, Landon Collins is in the middle of the kickoff, right next to Cade Foster. And so the two guys in the middle for Arkansas go right at him right after Cade kicks the ball off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just, you know, once again, everybody else was single guys. Just Landon was being double teamed.
Yep.
Talk about Derrick Henry real quick, because you spotted this after his big touchdown run. Talk about for the listeners what poor boy Derrick Henry had to do on the kickoff.
Yes,
that other guys didn't have to do.
You know, we've talked about, you know, some of these guys probably, you know, the star players never played special teams in high school. And you know, certainly, you know, I'm sure a number of them didn't. There's one thing I'm pretty sure Derrick Henry, you know, maybe hasn't done, at least maybe since his freshman year in high school. You know, he busts an 80-yard touchdown run. And then on the ensuing kickoff, he has to go out there and run 80 yards again down the field to cover it, to cover the kick. And he was kind of the last guy out there, like, really? Really?
You realize it was just me. By the way, you noticed other subs, right?
Yeah.
There was other subs that had been subbed in then.
Yeah. Do you think, and I've watched, you know, and I say this because I've watched that GIF a couple times, and I want people to go look at it. There's, and then you see Saban's kind of reaction. You know, players in the NFL, when they're trying to run out the clock, we've seen, you know, and actually Eddie Lacy did this, you know, for the Packers a couple weeks ago. You know, they're trying to run out the clock, and so, and you want to keep possession of the ball, and so they'll run and they'll have an opportunity to run for a touchdown, but they'll just go down, you know, to keep the clock moving. And so, what, you know, how do you think Saban would have reacted if Henry just, okay, I could score a touchdown, but I'm just going to go down?
See, man, from the way he reacted, you would think that that's what he would have wanted. But as a competitor, you know, the guy's got to try to score a touchdown. I hope that what Coach Saban is saying is, I ran a freaking sweep. And I didn't even have a lead blocker. I didn't even have a wide receiver out there split to block the cornerback. I hope what Coach Saban is saying is, defense, you should have been able to defend this play.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of blockers out there, but I'm not going to tell the guy just to fall on the ground.
Yeah.
I hope that's what he's saying. But I just, you and I was watching it in the game, and we saw all these guys come out on that kickoff that we had never seen on kickoff coverage. And so for Derrick Henry to come out, and then when the ball gets kicked off, right, he stops at about the 40-yard line because he's gassed.
Oh, yeah, clearly he's clearly he's winning.
And he just lets a guy block him that just stands in front of him. He's, yep, like, just stand in front of me, and I won't even try.
Yep.
So I hope that they don't show that in film.
They kind of went after him, you know, they wanted to hit him a little bit, but he didn't run down, and so they couldn't really level him. But
man, I hope he doesn't get nailed for that in the film. But if I'm Derrick Henry, I'm like, wait a minute, man. I'm a 5-star running back. I caused a fumble on the kickoff to start the second half. I just scored an 80-yard touchdown, and you really want me to go right back out there? But it does send a message to your point, right? that that Saban doesn't have favorites, or not very many of them.
Right. Right.
Hey, anything else on special teams?
You know, we got to talk about Cody Mandel. He only punted once again, and so, you know, he's got a good part-time gig, right?
Man, it is a good gig.
I think it's his third week in a row that he's only punted once, and this one was for 51 yards. So he's continuing to perform well for us. So I think that's exciting.
It is nice when his number gets called that he nails it 51 yards.
Yep.
What else? I do want to ask you real quick about the kickoffs because you know there's been the talk about Cade Foster and where he's kicking the ball to place it so that the coverage can get down there and they don't make it to the 25-yard line, blah, blah, blah. He had 6 kickoffs for an average of 61 yards, and Adam Griffith had 3 kickoffs for a 64.3 average, and 2 of his 3 kickoffs were touchbacks. What do you think about that?
Yeah, we're starting to see more Adam Griffith, and it's kind of bad on me because I'm not noticing that sort of in the moment as much as I need to be, but yeah, he seems to be. You know, a pretty good leg on those kickoffs. And, you know, someone asked me and do I think we're kicking it short? And there was articles like you said, and someone asked me if I thought that, and they were convinced that we are doing that on purpose. And I just don't buy that for a dollar any day of the week. I just don't think that we would do that. It's too risky and all of those things that we could talk about. And so if Adam can get it into the end zone, he may see his playing time go up.
Okay.
That'll be the test, right? If we're trying to kick it at the 3 and force the team to return it, or are we trying to kick it into the end zone? And if we are, I think we'll see Adam get more and more opportunities.
Well, I'm gonna go into your camp that I don't think it's a planned thing by any stretch of the imagination. I think that if Nick Saban had his way and we could nail it in the end zone every time, then that's what he would take all day long.
Yep.
Do you have a leaning as far as this Tennessee game? They obviously had a big victory. They should have sent a thank you gift to Coach Spurrier. It definitely built up some hype for this game. What do you think about this Tennessee Vols coming to town?
Yeah, you know, it's good that they're excited and you know, they beat South Carolina. I think they're running into a buzzsaw is what it's happening. I think that we're firing on all cylinders and that we'll continue to do that Saturday. I'm looking at a 38-10 kind of ball game. You know, they may feel a little high on themselves and score some more points. There's a little more, you know, I don't know if animosity is too strong of a word, but there's a little more tension in this rivalry with Tennessee that we have, you know, than there is with Arkansas. And so, as a result, I think there'll be a little more fight in Tennessee. They've got a really good offensive line. And so our defensive guys going against their offensive line, and they've got a number of offensive linemen that we recruited. James Stone is the one that stands out, and I know that they've got a couple others that we came really close in their recruiting battles to get. And so I know that those players in that type of situation kind of bring a little extra to the battle. I think that they'll play us well. I just think we'll wear them out. I just think by the time it's over, we'll wear them out. And so I look at a 38-10.
Okay. Well, I definitely think you're probably giving them a little extra love. I think they were.
I'm like, no love. I'm not giving them any love.
No, you're giving them more love, or you're giving them.
I'm giving a competitor a little bit of credit.
You're giving them a little more credit than I will give them.
All right.
Because they should not have won the game against South Carolina. They lucked into that thanks to Coach Spurrier and his use of timeouts and losing South Carolina their starting quarterback with 5 minutes left in the game.
Yep.
But they really shouldn't even been in the Georgia game. I mean, let's face it. This is a team that played the South Alabama Jaguars at home and had to hold on with South Alabama about to score and had to go for it on 4th and goal.
Yeah.
That would have sent it to overtime.
Yep.
Okay? And they got waxed by Oregon 59-14. So, Vol Nation, this is not going to be as close as David thinks. This is not going to be 52-0 because Saban just doesn't like to score 50 points on anybody. But this is definitely going to be of the 48-6 variety.
Okay.
We're going to put the high 40s on them.
Okay. Nice.
I hope my score is closer to my score than your score.
Well, I do too, because, you know, more the margin. I'm just.
It's Tennessee, you know, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm just, well, and but it's Tennessee, right? They've got a little more want to for this game. That's all.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. And they would love nothing more to come in and be a spoiler, for sure.
That's what I'm saying. And so that's kind of where I'm going on that. Hey, I just want to hit up, we didn't do this last time because I was kind of away from my home base last week, but I want to hit up some of the 5-star reviews that we've gotten. Man, we're up to 33 reviews, most of which, I think 32 of them are 5 stars. And so we're 17 away from my target. And so I hope that you guys will get out there and leave us, you know, an authentic review, not asking for a 5-star, but just an honest review and provide us some feedback. But I want to hit up some of these, you know, these guys that have gone out here and given us 5 stars and, you know, kind of share what people are saying. So SKS 1969 LA, tons of detail about lineup and substitutions, detail I've not found anywhere else. The essential resource for the serious fan. Bill Roll Tide, I love this podcast. Honest analysis that is informed, insightful, and opinionated. Oh yeah, it's humorous as well. So I think that's great. There's two of them a little long, so let me hit these short ones first. Rivula, Rivuala. I read about this on Tider Insider. I've been hooked ever since. Try it and spread the word. So that's cool. I like that. And two more that are a little bit longer, but these are good as well. Jay Sweat 04. This is my 4th year of listening, so I think that's awesome. He's been following since the start.
It is awesome.
He says it gets better every year, so that's cool. Says he's a high school coach and teacher, and that this is a great midweek escape to listen to while watching film and grading papers. He's going to have to run a play after us, right?
Absolutely, man.
Like, when we talk about some stuff, he's going to have to insert a play. These guys are extremely insightful and not only know but understand the pulse of the program and the fans. They know the depth chart as well as anyone not on the coaching staff. They are very informative on all views, not afraid to call out negatives of the team or individual players if they need to in an acceptable manner. And I hope we did that. I think hopefully it was acceptable what we did today.
It was.
Because we called out.
We did.
A dude. But this show is very listener fan friendly and is sure to solve any hunger you have for Alabama football. So that's cool. I like that.
Absolutely, man. That's awesome.
And this may be the best username. I have to scroll through in all the usernames, but ThunderForce90.
There you go.
Doesn't that just rock?
That does rock, man.
Like, I already want to go see that movie.
No, that's awesome, man. What did Thunder Force have to say?
I am an Alabama native, but live in Washington State. Started listening to the podcast this season. You guys do an awesome job of breaking down both sides of the ball and special teams. The mini game balls are great. Talking about all, and that's kind of all caps, all of the players who get on the field is my favorite part. Look forward to your analysis each week. Keep up the great work and hope to see you in Pasadena in January. I hope to see us in Pasadena in January as well.
You know, man, if we make it to Pasadena, which is what we called at the beginning of the season, we might just have to copy Rodney Orr, and we might just have an Alabama football podcast tailgate party from Pasadena, man. We might just have to set up a gathering.
Well, we might just have to just do a meetup and just find a bar and just kind of meet up and Thunder Force and others can buy us a drink.
No, man, just have a big gathering. We might just have to do it up right, man. We might have to have a gathering before the game in Pasadena, man. That would be awesome.
We'll put it out there. And so if we're in Pasadena, if the Tide plays there, if you're going to be there, let us know. And then we'll set up, you know, kind of size.
We'll find a space or something. Sure. Whether it's a bar or whatever. Yeah, absolutely.
If we get 3 people interested, I'm not going to, you know.
No, but if we, you know, we get exactly. We just based on what the numbers are. Shoot us an email and let us know if you're going to make the trip, man. If we're rolling in California.
And we'll see about, you know, setting something up if that works out. So that's a good idea. So anyway, no, and you know, hopefully kind of we go through these and it's kind of fun to go through what people write. But no, we really do appreciate it. Really, really do appreciate it. And so if you enjoy listening and you're on iTunes, and I know, and we get some emails, people are not on iTunes and so they can't leave the review. And so, hey,
just
we
go appreciate, to our website. Yeah go to our website that as well. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, you know, comments and stuff on the website. We appreciate that because other people see that too. They see the comments and sort of the social proof that that goes with that. And so that's certainly positive. But if you're on iTunes, you know, go give us a review. And like I said, I want to get that up to 50 by the end of the season. And so I think that'd be awesome if you guys could do that. So enough me rambling about that. Check us out on SECBias.com. We're interacting with you guys there. Really appreciate that. I think with that, Tom, let's say Roll Tide, and it's been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.